Page 14. For the second question, the answer was yes, except for Gulland, Grossmann and Neumann, with the last soon abandoning part of his position. Footnote 24. Text. Here we are especially interested in the answer which the main line of critical theory in the 1940s, Horkheimer and Pollock, gave to the question about the very possibility of new post-capitalist and yet antagonistic social formations. The position of the 1940s indicating the new statist form social formations have already emerged, at least tendentially. In three different forms was attained only gradually. We have already reviewed the social philosophical summary of the shift in Horkheimer's work. Its political economic meaning, in many respects even more dramatic, is best visible in the theoretical development of Friedrich Pollock. As early as two Zeitschrift articles of 1932 and 1933, die gegenwärtige Lage des Kapitalismus und die Aussichten einer planwirtschaftlichen Neuordnung and Bemerkungen zur Wirtschaftskrise, footnote 25, text. Pollock rejected all attempts to assimilate the current economic crises, the Great Depression, to previous crises of the capitalist economy. According to him, new structural elements within capitalist development, increasing centralization and monopolization, state intervention as yet planned and arbitrary, and vast increases in the use of industrial technology have definitely damaged the self-regulation of the capitalist market system. While the diagnosis indeed led Pollock to argue for the end of liberal capitalism based on the automatic self-regulating market, the ascendancy of individual enterprise and parliamentary government, footnote 26, text. He had no doubt that the short-run replacement would be only a renewed capitalism, merely a new constellation on the ground of the existing system of social relations, that is, monopoly capitalism. Pollock never considered this solution to be a stable one. That his views were appropriately in flux is shown by a comparison of the two articles in question. On the basis of the capitalist crisis and the survival of planning efforts in the Soviet Union, which Pollock studied in the late 1920s, both articles maintained that economic planning is the already present future womb of industrial societies. Neither article presupposing Lukács' stress on the subjective factor considered this result necessary in the purely economic sense. Footnote 27, text. A prolonged period of economic stagnation, for example, is repeatedly considered as a possibility. This was the meaning for Pollock of monopoly capitalism without planning. In 1932, Pollock offered only the long-term alternatives of capitalist planning in the existing social context and revolutionary socialist planning. Footnote 28, text. However, in 1933, he outlined a third objective possibility. He now indicated a version of monopoly capitalism regulated or controlled by the state in a new sense altogether, abolishing the freedom of contracts, nationalizing some key economic sectors, partially subordinating profitability to grow as the key economic criterion and guaranteeing the survival of the private monopolistic sector through fiscal policy, government orders and direct subsidies. Footnote 29, text. Page 15. Pollock was not yet speaking of the emergence of a new social formation. The changes represented by the third model only involve political economic adaptation to the old social economic relations of production, either by destroying or by constraining the proverbially threatening forces of production, or by stretching to the limits the existing relations to accommodate the ever-growing productive forces. The connoisseur will appreciate it here, the surviving bits of orthodox Marxist folklore in the critical theory of the 1930s. The stretching in question could go so far, according to Pollock, that total capital in the form of the state actually plans the economic process, overgeneralizing from the extremely recent German experience. Pollock tended to consider the authoritarian framework essential for this last solution. Footnote 30, text. Again, departing from this position of a year earlier, he now argued that capitalist planning would be supported by the leadership of key monopolies and the state bureaucracy, but only initially by the middle classes. This relative weakness of social base required, in Pollock's eyes, the authoritarian state. Thus, Pollock in 1933, as Marcuse in 1934, and Horkheimer as late as 1939, pronounced the authoritarian state the logically necessary political form of a stabilized monopoly capitalism. Again, we should note that partial convergence of come-in-turn doctrine in the first version of critical theory. The orthodoxy of the critical theory of the 1930s was not based on the de-emphasis of the subtle structural spheres of political and cultural, which would have been highly irresponsible in the circumstances of Nazi Germany. There were good historical reasons, at least until 1936, to consider Nazi Germany fundamentally capitalist. So he did not seem to resist the reinterpretation of Marxist theory as critical theory or critique of ideology. Pollock was rather insistent on one of the original meanings of critique, the project of uncovering the roots and possibilities of crises. Footnote 31, text. Pollock believed in 1933 at least that the authoritarian system emerging in 1933, unlike the planned society of the Soviet Union, footnote 32, text, still had the original crises tendencies of liberal capitalism. Thus, even if the frozen surface of a national socialist Germany, with all its horrors, different totally from that of the classical capitalist system, the internal economic dynamic, crucial for the Marxists, remained the same. Pollock was certainly not stupidly optimistic about this state of affairs in the manner of come-in-turn orthodoxy. Page 16. In his eyes, one crucial political dynamic aspect of liberal capitalism was now missing, not just in Germany, but in other capitalist societies. The subjective factor of potential agent of transformation, the revolutionary proletariat. The 1933 essay is perhaps the first to ground this basic belief, or rather fear, of critical theory among the causes for the decline of the revolutionary proletariat. Pollock names the destruction of the skilled, educated working class by modern, rationalized methods of production, as well as new methods of mass manipulation and violent repression. Footnote 33, text. In this respect, too, the fascist experience can be considered formative for critical theory. In the essays of the 1940s, reproduced below, Pollack and Horkheimer clearly build their analysis of the authoritarian state on the economic theory developed by the former in the 1930s. Yet they broke with this theory in one fundamental respect rich in new implications, that the states that solved or avoided the final crises of capitalism were now construed as representatives of a new social formation, the authoritarian state or state capitalism. It is our thesis that because Horkheimer included the Soviet Union among antagonistic and exploitative social formations, he opened the possibility of considering state-integrated industrial social formations as the proper terrain of a new Marxist critique. Only in the Soviet Union was the reality of the primacy of the political inescapable, but unless the idea of the Soviet Union as a transitional society to socialism, that is, was rejected, no comparison with antagonistic societies seemed possible either theoretically or politically. The Frankfurt theory of the 1930s, despite Pollack's affinity to an economic theory that dealt with alternative possibilities and not necessities, was still wedded to the simple alternatives for late industrial societies. Socialism or capitalism in the Soviet Union of 1940. They finally saw a third alternative, one that drove critical theory beyond the facile acceptance of the politically instituted plan as progress. Only the critique of the Soviet Union allowed the critique of the political plan to replace the critique of the system of commodities, the critique of the state to replace the critique of political economy. If the first version of the theory that confronted the primacy of politics in the context of the New Deal, the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany anticipated elements of both convergence and totalitarianism thesis. Hence, the often noted analogy of Bruno Risi's and James Burnham's contemporary books, footnote 33a, text, this was so only in terms of its descriptive elements. Page 17. Horkheimer and his colleagues dealt with emergence and the possible future of authoritarian states in terms colored by an entirely different philosophical posture. As a result, their theory can be differentiated by considering question 3 above relating to the genesis of the authoritarian state. The emergence of Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia as authoritarian states. We have already indicated that critical theory saw the prolonged World Depression as the objective context for the emergence of National Socialism. As usual, there was no disregard of the subjective factor. Already in 1934, Herbert Marcuse systematically investigated the pseudo-Gemeinschaft ideology of the fascist mass movement, while Erich Fromm in the 1930s and 1940s and Adorno between 1940 and 1951 produced important studies on the social psychology of fascism. Footnote 34, text. In this context, the Institute's work was more sophisticated than most contemporary analysis of fascism. From the point of view of Marxian Lukashian analysis of the socialization of society and the destruction of community, Marcuse was able to show the attraction to broad strata of ideologies of nature, folk, blood, and soil, ideologies that attacked urbanization, industrialization, and modernization. The promise of National Socialism was to reverse the isolation, enemy, and proletarization of the petty bourgeois and prevent the further economic decline of the peasant in a new national community. But since on the ground of evil society, with exchange as the social nexus, no community was possible. The new ideology could only operate on a terrain of irrationality. The same irrationalism disguised as also the contradiction